the Thing, and Modred the Mystic.
Welcome to FW Team Up, a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm Siskoid.
And I'm Ryan Daly.
Taking you through a classic superhero team up, The Thing and superstar Modred the Mystic from Marvel 2-in-1 number 33, cover dated November of 1977. And Ryan, we may still be in Britain, but I think we're finally leaving London.
You mean there's more?
There's another issue after this. This is going to finally end one of these ongoing team-ups.
Yeah, the one that won't end, yeah. The whole reason we started this was because I wanted to talk about Spider-Woman, Jessica Drew, for a little bit. And now, 2 years later, however long it's been.
Yeah, a little bit has been a long time. We're finally getting to the end of her story, or the start of her story, as we'll see. But the cover feature is Modred the Mystic, so we need to preface with a reason or reasons why we like this guest character. What's so great about Modred the Mystic?
I might take issue with the premise of your question. I don't have much good to say about the character. Like, all powerful wizards and magic users like this can be tough for me unless they have like something that kind of makes them unique and distinct. Like, love Zatanna, obviously. I love Doctor Strange and Brother Voodoo. I love the look of Doctor Fate, but I've never gotten that interested in his character. And Modred is one that, all right, he's got an interesting look, but it's not dissimilar from like Dr. Midnight or something without the cowl. It's kind of similar color scheme and patterns. And yeah, he just, I don't know. This character doesn't really do it for me.
When you say the ones you like versus the ones you don't like in terms of mystical characters, and I agree, those wizards who can do anything, unless the story's about something else, which I think maybe someone like Jan DeMatteis on Dr. Fate could do, but
if the character is that powerful that their powers can be almost a deus ex machina where they can get out of anything, then there has to be a personality flaw or quirk or something to their internal character that makes them susceptible to anger or danger or overreaction or like nervousness, insecurity, things like that. And if the character is too flat for that, then okay.
Especially if they're like this booming voice, and you know, the helmet of Naboo is, and Modred the Mystic is kind of like that in here. So I don't disagree with you at all. Honestly, this is the only story I've ever read with him in it. And before that, I think the only notion of him was the Ohatmu entry, which does look cool, Stanwalk art. But you know, otherwise, I have no connection to this character. He's sort of, maybe he lived in people's minds a little more in the 90s, as we'll look at the publication history. Those aren't comics that I read. So, And that publication history starts very close to this issue that we're covering. He's the lead character in the first two issues of Marvel Chillers in 1975. Number one by Bill Mantlo, Marv Wolfman, Ann Hattingen, and Young Montano. Number two is by Mantlo, John Byrne, and Sonny Trinidad. And the story doesn't lead to more. Tigra takes over the Marvel Chillers as of issue 3. So Wolfman brought the character back 2 years later for this issue of Marvel 2-in-1. The idea is that he's an apprentice of Merlin's who magically slept until he was awakened today to fight elder gods that have a connection to the Darkhold. I think he's Marvel's take on Elric, personally. This is what he looks like with the silver locks. So a lot of his trajectory as a character has been swinging between the heroic model and a sorcerous villain corrupted by the Darkhold. Because after this, he fights the Avengers, and in the 80s, Captains America and Britain, and then Quasar. 1992's Midnight Suns event makes him a supporting cast player in the Darkhold series and the related books, including Doctor Strange, Morbius, and Midnight Suns itself. But that's all over after 1995. And I don't think he makes a non-flashback appearance until 2009, Ryan?
I think you're right. In the Dark Reign era, Modred served the evil C'thon in issues 21 through 23 of The Mighty Avengers. He made a one-panel cameo in the fifth issue of Dr. Voodoo when Brother Voodoo became the Sorcerer Supreme. In 2016, Modred served the evil Dr. Druid battling the Squadron Supreme on Weird World And after that, he served the evil master of the world in issues 25 through 27 of Champions. And that story in 2018, I believe, is the most recent appearance of Modred. And if I'm wrong, who cares?
I mean, potentially the most obscure character we've had in a team-up.
Sure, probably. However, I had actually read more with this guy. I was kind of sporadically picking up a lot of the Midnight Suns books and those crossovers and the issues in that realm in the 90s. So I'm sure I saw him then. He didn't leave much of an impression because I didn't hear about him again until I got the Essential volume, Marvel's Essentials, when they printed those. Like, he was in the first volume of Marvel Horror, which inexplicably collected the first couple issues of Marvel Chillers, I think because they thought the name Chillers would go with horror. But his appearances are not horror stories. It would be a stretch to call them even dark fantasy. So I just kind of read that. I was like, I don't care. And an interesting little note, after his first appearance in Chillers 1, it says next issue, Tigra. But she doesn't come until issue 3. So there must have been something jumbled around where they put him in an extra story. Yeah, he's there. Like, his very first appearance, you mentioned kind of Elric, but like the story, there's like two archaeologists like digging up and they discover a cave where he's kind of just like seated in the chair, sort of kind of similar to where we get him in this story. But then there's like a cave in. So it's, I think there's a little bit of Dr. Fate's origin in that they kind of like stumble upon the tomb of this magical user, except obviously he doesn't possess them. He just kind of awakens to that.
Well, this one is called From Stonehenge with Death. It's written by Marv Wolfman. It's got art by Ron Wilson and Pablo Marcos, pretty much as usual in this storyline. And essentially, it's this. Alicia convinces Ben to visit Stonehenge, but there they attract the attention of four elementals dispatched by an evil Merlin imposter. I'm not sure the story makes that clear, but, you know, that's what's happening, to capture Modred the Mystic. But they might as well capture Ben and Alicia as they did other tourists to feed off their energies. Ben struggles even with the help of Spider-Woman, but Modred shows up to fight the monsters, and when he seems to be destroyed by them, he actually turns into a pan-dimensional god for a bit and destroys them. Then he tells Spider-Woman the truth about herself and promises to guide her to a new life, and he wipes Ben and Leisha's memories of their British vacation. We'll get into that, but before we get into the story, let's talk about that cover. It's by George Perez and Joe Sinnott. You're in the cave system. There's a rushing water, maybe sort of waterfall, because there's all the steam coming off of it. Ben is reaching for, has Alicia in his arms. He's reaching for a rock, and Modred is mystically blasting a giant flaming hand. You got all the elements here. Modred says, "Have no fear, Grimm. This creature will be destroyed." Ben answers, "Yeah, before or after Alicia and me drown." And the caption is, "Demons from the past invade the world of today. Sorcery over Stonehenge." Your thoughts on the cover?
Ooh, first of all, fire and water represent. I mean, this cover is great for this network. Those are two predominant elements in this cover. I like this cover a lot. Spoilers, I think this cover is the best thing about this issue. But I do like it. I like the elements. I like the perspective, the danger. The giant flaming hand is good. Looks a little bit familiar. The sort of lines over the red hands make it look very Human Torch-like.
Yeah.
But yeah, Ben reaching for it. I like this cover. It's George Perez, and it's actually colored very well this time. We don't get a lot of distracting backgrounds. So, yeah, this is good. I like this one a lot.
I mean, it's got all the colors. You get, you know, you get a red and a blue and a green and an orange, and it's a very well balanced. Joe sent it to me, the thing, inker. I've always felt like his, whenever he inked, whoever, Kirby, whoever, like in this case, George Perez in this case, wow. You know, so it's very well composed. You may be right that this is the best thing about this issue, simply because the art is just so strong. Mm-hmm. And I got to say, Ryan, yes, fire and water, but we're also co-founders of this network, so maybe we need to choose our own elements here. We're always leaving it to Shag and Rob, and we need to involve Chris, obviously, in this, the five founders. So there are three other alchemical elements, air, earth, and ether, which is like spirit. Which one do you want?
Well, I think Chris would be the ether or the spirit, and I'm like going with like a Captain Planet thing, but like I think that fifth element is heart or love, and Chris and Cindy, they've got the love, you know, represented.
Yes.
So earth and air. I think a lot of our listeners would accuse me of just being either long-winded or full of hot air, kind of a gas bag. So I think that's probably what most people would think for me.
I can't believe I'm earth, but I'll be dirt.
You're very grounded.
Yeah, unfortunately, the alchemists never thought of fishnets as an element, but, you know.
That's why I don't like the issue.
Big picture, this story, I mean, you've already left us a clue that you didn't enjoy it that much.
It's an interesting, we finally get some good scenes between Ben and Alicia that kind of put his guilt for putting her in danger and like everything that's a culmination of everything that has gone before. But I'm not sure if I like the resolution of what happens after that. The threat of just elementals being fought by magic. It's a lot of flashy powers and stuff like that without a ton of great character or interesting. So it's hampered by the fact that I don't care about the guest or the villains. But the stuff with our protagonist, Ben and Alicia, I like that a lot. So it's a mixed bag.
My main criticism is that it is excessively wordy.
Mm-hmm.
Like more than usual, even though like the fights get smothered in dialogue and it's like it doesn't let the art breathe. You know, when the elementals are going to be introduced, they're all screaming their heads off in in mystic speak, or, you know, it's just like there's so much to read. You know, exposition on Stonehenge and recaps. And I mean, the guest star is obviously very long-winded. He speaks in this sort of cod Shakespearean.
Yeah, Asgard Shakespearean.
And if it were just that, but no, it's like the prose, the captions are very wordy. Mm. And I'm not always sure that Wolfman knows what he's saying. The word choice is sometimes suspect, as we'll discuss. If we get into the issue itself, the splash page is actually, I guess, very sweet. It's Ben and Alicia kissing. You know, it's part of that recap, etc. We're going to get into it. But after the events of the previous issues where she was turned into a spider woman herself or spider monster, we're back on track with the vacation.
The kissing is kind of sweet because we like these characters so much. But it's one of those things where like their relationship works if you don't think about it too much. But when it's like literally focused, like magnifying glass over this thing, then you're like, okay, now you're making me think. When she kisses him, what does it feel like? Is it like kissing the sidewalk? like what is the actual texture of his face and the movement of his lips feel like? And then even in the text, he makes a comparison to Romeo and Juliet, or Romeo and Juliet and Antony and Cleopatra. It's like, those are interesting choices, but they didn't end happily.
It's a little bit like the people I know who have a kid and they call her Ophelia. And I'm like, you do know that is like a famous suicide, right? And I don't think the name exists before Shakespeare creates it. So that's very much the origin of the name. What are you doing? But Romeo and Juliet, Antony and Cleopatra, both tragedies with the lovers killing themselves.
Yeah, both tragic suicides. So I guess we know how this story is going to end. I haven't kept up with the current Ryan North Fantastic Four series, but I assume this is what he's leading towards.
Oh, God. I don't think so, because
no, I know. He has a much different take on that. That's very nice.
I think he's quite in love with Alicia. I think Alicia is kind of the main character of that series almost.
Yeah.
The recap is basically told, like the second page is just them in an embrace and then discussing what to do next. He says, vacation's over. You know, let's go home. And she's like, no, I wanted to see Stonehenge. Of course, she wants to see some big rocks. That's perfectly normal for her. I mean, as a sculptor, not as a lover of the thing. And he's going, like, he's saying things throughout this issue, like, why do you want to hang out with a bunch of lumpy rocks? You know, it's like not much self-awareness or maybe self-deprecation. And so, okay, we'll go to the edge of England, the bit of England that just like took over Wales, because obviously Stonehenge is a Welsh monument. And we're also getting the box that ate Chauncey and Trevor. It's glowing and there's like a hand coming out of it. And I'm not sure this connects very well with what we see later.
No, I don't believe so.
yeah, it doesn't connect well. My interpretation is that the demonic claw that comes out of it, is that one of the elementals? Because Chauncey is going to be part of their prisoners.
Yeah.
So is that what that is? Or is it Mordred coming back, but it doesn't look like Mordred's hand?
I think we have to interpret it as one of the elementals, or sort of a representation of all of them, kind of their evil in manifesting as a hand.
It's like it's coming out of the box, but that's not where the action is going to be. So, okay. Page 3 also has an England that has both jungles and huge craggy mountains like the Rockies. The drive to Stonehenge is something else. And when we get to Stonehenge, we get an info dump on what it's supposed to be and so on. But it's interesting that we see the visitor's center, because you never think of that.
Right.
And yeah, whenever you see pictures of Stonehenge, it's just the rocks. But of course, there has to be like a little museum and
it's an interpretation. It's fenced in, yeah, but the fence is far enough back that you don't see it in the pictures.
Yeah. And I mean, they show that. So in terms of research, this is where the research starts.
Yeah.
After the mountains. And there's not many tourists around, but I guess maybe they've been eaten by...
I mean, the parking lot looks to be full. there's a lot of cars.
Yes, but there's no one there. So I'm guessing this must be what's happening here.
And then there's a close-up shot of eyes, and I assumed it was Spider-Woman because the shading of, like, the face is red, and the eyes are just like, they're like the Spider-Man type of just like heavy black outlines over white in that kind of triangular shape. So I assumed it was Spider-Woman. But that's also kind of how Modred's eyes are colored, except like his face obviously would be a Caucasian flesh tone. So I'm not really sure what that panel is about with the eyes.
I mean, you're correct that, you know, Modred's going to show up. So here's the caption. Eyes, : piercing through an opaque veil, watching. And this is a story where Spider-Woman's going to show up suddenly. She's been following Ben. And then later, Mordred shows up, coming out of the rock and basically taking over the second half of the book. So both of them are lying in wait. I still assume that this is supposed to be Spider-Woman. She's the first one to show up.
Yeah, then I guess like the opaque veil would just be her mask, like the lenses of her.
Yes, but here's what I mean when I said like Wolfman maybe doesn't know what the words he's using are mean. If they're opaque, then she can't see through them. They're opaque from our side, but not from her side. So she's not looking through an opaque veil. Anyway, this is the wordiness is just like, runs off with the story at times. I don't know. And throughout this trip to this point, I should mention, because I think it kind of fits with what's going to happen at the end. Despite the fact that Alicia insists that she wants to forget her experience as Spider-Licia, Ben keeps bringing it up, you know. So maybe that's why she wants to go to Stonehenge, to make him jealous, you know. Like, It's just like, stop mentioning it, dude. This is going to tie in with the mind wipe at the end, as we'll see. Mm-hmm. But we need to get into the action. The elementals sense Ben and Alicia. I don't know what triggers them, really, because they're waiting around for Mordred. They're looking for Mordred. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. They got a power signature, I guess.
Something.
Whatever. So suddenly, they bring Ben and Alicia under the Stonehenge. So there's, for Doctor Who fans, there's an underhenge. But in the comics here, it's like a pocket of hell itself, filled with the zombie husks of tourists who dared visit Stonehenge.
Mm.
And it's really chilly down there. Alicia keeps going on about her sweater that she wished she brought, even though I think she's wearing a very snug hoodie here. But I guess it's really cold, despite the fact that there's a giant fire monster there. But we meet the four elementals.
First of all, I think there's a misattribution to one of the dialogue, because the mud earth elemental calls one of the others Mud Brother. And I'm pretty sure that was supposed to be a different character calling him Mud Brother. I mean, in terms of elementals, where they basically all are a manifestation of like one form or another. So I think the mud / earth guy looks pretty cool. He's got kind of like ram horns type of stuff, and he's more burly. The wind guy is just humanoid with kind of more of his like whoosh lines through him. The fire elemental is human torch with a bit more of a, you know, mystical inhuman head, and the water guy has what all water characters need, which is that fin running through the through the top of his head, running backwards. It's like
he's the best one.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
he's the best one, but all the others hate him. Yeah, I mean they keep trashing him throughout.
They're cool enough for what they are, I think, in terms of. If you're going to do elementals that are just, like, that don't have, like, clothing or uniforms or any other kind of physical characteristics, if it's just this, I think these are drawn about as interestingly as they could be.
Yeah. And, of course, they have, like, these speech patterns. But Spider-Woman jumps into the action. She's plunging through the water guy and going right through. And immediately we get a sense of the danger of each of these elements. And, you know, that works fine. And they also put all the people, including Alicia, who is not fighting back because she can't, into this little alcove where they're kind of in a trance. This is where all the visitors have been going, and that's why they were missing. So that leaves our heroes to fight these monster forms. It's a fairly okay fight once they're done with the talking.
Right, yeah, it takes them a little bit. And you mentioned before that Spider-Woman kind of shows up out of nowhere. She does. She just kind of like bursts through the water elemental, and Ben is like, Spider-Woman, you here? She goes, I followed you, my friend. It's like, why?
How? why? But how?
Was she just lonely? Because, like, we know that she's had this, she's no longer working for Hydra, she's no longer affiliated with them. Was she just like, I don't know anybody else, I don't have any other friends, can I just tag along with your Stonehenge visit? It's like, probably should have asked. What's going on?
Yeah, but I think at this point, you know, she believes that she's a spider who was evolved into a woman. So she has no backstory,
mm-hmm.
no human friends. She knows no one. So it makes as much sense as it can. As to the how, it proves, and as we'll see it geographically, but it proves that we're really in the Underhenge, because if you're just going to, you know, suddenly make characters vanish and suddenly they're in this cave system with demons, this doesn't have to be right under Stonehenge. It's another dimension. It's, you know, so the fact that she shows up means that it is somehow connected to the area and that she managed to find herself there because they didn't bring her. Obviously, we're going to mention some of the cool moves of the characters, which may include some of the fighting, but we never talk about the cool moves of the bad guys. So I want to mention here the Earth Elemental punching at, you'd think he'd have control over it rather, but he punches at stalagmites and they go flying at Ben. So there's like, that's a pretty cool move.
Yeah, yeah.
And it means that the Earth Elemental isn't really like controlling the Earth in the same way that, I guess none of them are controlling anything. They're just like, when the characters are being drowned, it's really, they're in the body of the Water Elemental.
Right, right, right.
Right? Yeah. When there's wind, they're inside the Air Elemental. Mm-hmm. So they don't control, you know, outside of themselves. They're just really big and they can do that. Page 9, finally the guest star shows up. 9 pages to go. So at the midpoint, he shows up. Mordred the Mystic talks like Thor.
Mm-hmm.
He takes over the fight, basically. You know, of course, you've got the cover where Ben is trying to reach Alicia, who is in, you're like zoned out. But the fight with the elementals is basically Mordred takes that over. It's one of those big magical brawls.
I mean, in terms of just a demonstration of powers, it's cool. And I mean, I kind of undersold his look. He's got a fine look for this type of character. It's a decent, like, there's a nice blend, mix of colors. And like the stark white hair is kind of interesting, kind of makes him stand out. It's also the type of look that you could easily associate with a villainous mystical character. So it's, you know, not surprising that like later on in his publication history, he is more of a villain or antagonist to a lot of the heroes. Spider-Woman, Ben, they're still kind of getting involved in the fight, but it still seems pretty one-sided.
I mean, she manages to zap the Earth Elemental, and later it doesn't quite work as well on the Fire Elemental.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, they bounce back quite easily, the monsters. It's really up to Mordred himself to do all this stuff. He does a lot of stuff with his powers. I think that's really, he is a deus ex machina. You know, he makes the sun burn the wind. He merges with another dimension. He makes the elemental monsters fight each other. He retcons Spider-Woman into Jessica Drew at the end. And basically, you know, he deus ex machinas the crap out of the issue. And Ben has trouble finding something to do. Like, he's going to protect Alicia, but even that, that's kind of a weak plot point where she's standing in an alcove alone. Why? Why isn't she with the group?
Yeah, why isn't she with Chauncey, who Ben kind of recognizes? It's like, hey, isn't that one of those guys from that subplot a few issues ago that we didn't care about and never paid off?
And still don't? And I mean, by the end of this, like, they save all the these people. So I guess Chauncey and Trevor get away with their crimes because that's it for them. Unless you threaten me with their showing up in the next issue.
That guy who I think was a Nazi, but it was so long ago and left so little of impression, I don't really remember.
Yeah, that's it. And there's a lot of trying to tie up some subplots, but is it really satisfying? I don't know. I mean, parts of this fight do look cool. The, you know, Modred in the tornado, it's a really good pose. They bring him out of Stonehenge. So there's like this big tornado all around Stonehenge and see rocks flying around. They're really screwing up this historical site. And in the meanwhile, you know, the water's rising. Okay, is there really water rising? Are we in the elemental body or not? I don't know. But it's not like actively trying to drown them. It's just like rising, and Ben can easily save Alicia from that. Eventually, Modred takes care of it, and it just like blasts everyone, has all the powers that you want to have. And you're right, on page 15 or whatever it is, those eyes show up in the sky, which look a lot like the eyes of Spider-Woman earlier.
Yeah.
But this
yeah.
time they're the Modred god.
I guess
what made you think of it.
That's what it was. When I saw those again, I was like, oh, maybe those eyes were Modred's in the beginning, and like the opaque veil was like him peering between dimensions or something, but I don't know. Like, I think Marv needed a second draft of this story, but of course they didn't have the time for that.
But in the end, the elementals are dispelled. The heroes crawl out of a massive butthole in the ground in the middle of Stonehenge.
It doesn't look good.
And then in the mists part, and Modred is back from his godly interval, and suddenly he's like, well, I'm going to fix every problem. Yeah, I'm going to fix every subplot here.
Yeah.
He tells Spider-Woman that she's not a bug, that she's a person, that he somehow knows this. And basically, the issue here, I mean, we'll get a caption for it, right? They're going to announce that Spider-Woman's new series is soon going to premiere. And so this is going to be a new status quo. Right. I will say that that Spider-Woman series, that first issue is by Wolfman. I mean, he's using Marvel 2-in-1, and I don't like it. But he's using Marvel 2-in-1 kind of to service all his pet characters. He created Modred. He's going to give Spider-Woman a series. And I think we've said this before, as we've gone through these, it's like, oh, okay, he's paying off some old storyline that got cut off in whatever anthology book
right.
that he was writing. Deathlock is the same, isn't it? It's mm-hmm. like, so yeah, I feel like he's often leaving the thing behind to give us a chapter in a story nobody was really following.
Yeah, and maybe some of that is just professional pride, like having more invested in the characters and wanting to pay those off, which I can understand and to a point respect, but it's, I don't know, if it's not producing a interesting matchup, an interesting team up for this story.
Also, it's part of the, you know, 70s Marvel with all these little baronies, you know, like mm-hmm. the editorial. He's editing his own books so he can push these things forward, whereas another editor would either ask for that to happen or tell a writer not to do it.
Right.
There's like this behind the scenes stuff going on.
Where this little saga began with the thing in Nick Fury and then Deathlok and then Namor and then Shang-Chi, like, and then Spider-Woman. Like, I like the beginning and the build up and like the way all of these things play into each other. But it's like once he got to Spider-Woman, as much as I love the character, it was like he kind of like tripped over something, because then we've got two issues of Alicia as the spider monster with Sue Storm thrown in just to kind of resolve that plot kind of haphazard. And then this whole thing, and he still doesn't know what he's doing with her. And I think the first part of this, like, whole saga was really strong and really interesting with fun guest stars. But the last couple issues have been much harder. I'm kind of with Ben. It's like, let's get the heck out of this, the city and the country.
And I think the most egregious thing for me is the last page. Okay, we've dealt with Spider-Woman. We're going to send Spider-Woman off into a new setup. I mean, although Modred offers to teach her when she next appears in Spider-Woman number one, Modred has abandoned her already. So it's just, he opened up her memories, I guess, is this the notion, and it happens in between issues. But what's egregious is the whole idea of Ben being mind wiped, asking to be memory wiped, because he can't stand to remember Alicia as Spider-Licia. And she's like, nah, it's fine. He says, no, you're traumatized. So he forces a memory wipe on her and on himself. I mean, never mind that Sue Storm is going to remember all this going, you know, like Sue's going to go, oh, you're back. That Spider-Licia stuff, eh? And he's going to go, what? Why would anyone agree to a memory wipe? Like, especially superheroes. It's not like they haven't seen this kind of stuff before.
Why has the British Parliament formally denounced our vacation and revoked our passport to the UK forevermore? It's like, what happened to us then?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be in the news, right? So it's... It's ridiculous that they would actually forget any of this, and then that would make sense. And but they stick with it. When Spider-Woman shows up in Marvel 2-in-1 later, in number 85, she recalls why the Thing will not remember her.
Yeah.
So it's mind-wiped him. Like, he doesn't remember the vacation. So he's like, now in his head, he's never met Shang-Chi, he's never met Spider-Woman.
Yeah. And I mean, the other, like, when you step back and, like, you look at it, almost as if, like, all of his comic book appearances are part of his life. Yeah, your girlfriend turning into a spider monster trying to kill you and having to fight, like, that is a bad, bad experience. But it's not the worst thing that's ever happened to these characters.
Especially since Alicia seems okay with it. You know, like, let's stop talking about it, but she's not particularly traumatized.
Yeah, this makes Ben seem a lot less emotionally sound.
Very strange.
He's supposed to be the Rock. Not, like, physically, but, like, in terms of, like, he's the steady. He's the guy you can depend on. This just doesn't make him look good.
All right, who fared better? How well does this fit each of the stories or atmospheres? Is this a Thing story, or is it more of a Modred the Mystic story, if there is such a thing? Or alternatively, I think you can still choose Spider-Woman. Because there's mystical stuff sent by the evil Merlin doppelganger of the Modred story. So is it a Modred story?
I mean, he comes in halfway, but it, like, all of the action is centered around here. The villains appear because they're looking for Modred, and he's the one who solves the crisis by getting rid of them. So in terms of the plot, the action, it's very Modred-centric. I think it's not a Spider-Woman story except for, like, the last page. It's like they try to hijack it for a Spider-Woman story by giving her this epiphany about her origin. But all the emotional weight, the characters I'm invested in, the characters I care about, even though I don't like how it resolves the mind wipe, I don't like that. But the reason they go to Stonehenge is because of their relationship and Ben's pathos over, like, seeing Alicia in danger underneath and worrying about the drowning. And I'm torn here. I want to say it's more of a Thing story because the thing that I'm more interested about in this story is Thing and Alicia-centric.
I guess it is. I mean, in terms of the emotional stakes.
Yeah.
It kind of is their story. But I feel like Marv has put it all in the service of continuing Mordred's story. And repositioning Spider-Woman for her series. So it really does become about his own creations here. All right, cool moves. What is the Thing's coolest move?
Probably his first real move in the action sequence is when he punches the Earth monster. And it's not the Sal Buscema punch because it's not framed that way, but we do get the same idea where he's throwing the punch, the elemental is flying towards us, and we just see, like, the hero between the guy's legs as they're spread out as he's flying back. Ron Wilson is doing a little bit of a Buscema thing there, which I like.
Yeah, I think it's kind of slim pickings, isn't it?
Yeah.
Page 8 has a good... I like this. Whenever, like, the hero is kind of trapped in something, and they just, like, flex, and everything explodes around them. So there's a moment like that where he frees himself from Rock. And I think that looks cool. What about the guests? You can, of course, you can pick Modred or you can pick a Spider-Woman moment, up to you.
He tells Jessica what she wants to hear and so he can walk away with her. So whether or not he actually knows anything about her history or he's just using that as a line to hook up with her when she's in a vulnerable state, that might be the case. But I'll actually go with an action thing that he does. It's like when we see him, his first like that long panel, his appearance, that page, the mud elemental, the rock elemental, does the thing that you mentioned before where he punches the stalactites in the last panel, and then that switches to the panel on the next page where he kind of does this, like, he crosses his arms in like an X shape to, he puts a shield barrier up that destroys them before they reach him. And that's kind of a cool move.
I mean, he does everything. So I guess becoming a god, yeah, it has to be like the biggest power move that we've seen in the series. Yeah. It's like, temporarily become a god. Okay. Anything. What about dumb or weird moves? Although that does count for a weird move. But let's start with the thing.
Third page, when they're driving through the jungle and then the mountains, wherever they are, Ron Wilson makes the point, he correctly puts the steering wheel on the right side of the car in that one, sort of. But they're driving on the wrong side of the road.
I was so focused on the geography, you know, the wonky topology of topography, or whatever the word would be, of this ride between London and Stonehenge, that I did not notice that they were, yes, on the wrong side of the road.
This is Stonehenge, Costa Rica.
And another research fail. Oh, mind blown. I need my mind wiped because I think that is the thing's weirdest move, dumbest move, is asking for a memory wipe. Like we said, I don't think that's in character. I don't think that's necessary in the story. Who cares? To me, that the weirdest and dumbest moment. But what about Modred and or Spider-Woman?
It's his Thor speak. It's the Asgardian dialect and everything. And I understand wanting to give him more of a medieval dialect or speech type and everything, but it's that the word choices and everything, that the speaking style is so connected and so associated with Thor that I found it distracting every time he talked. Like, and I was like, is he one of the Warriors Three? Should he be with Baldur and Fandral and stuff?
I mean, it's part of that wordiness that I criticize.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, I'll use one of my runner-ups for cool moves, I guess, as a weird-ass move. But it is really very strange. Can the sun burn the wind? Because at some point he makes the sun burn the air elemental. Can you burn the wind? Maybe you can. I don't know enough about weather patterns.
You know, Adele had that song set Fire to the Rain, so I'm going to allow it.
It's magic, so it's a strange mystery. I know Ben, at one point in the issue, references Leonard Nimoy in Search Of, right? That show.
Yeah.
So in search of, does the sun burn the wind? Experts, leave comments.
If you could burn the wind that's like setting fire to the atmosphere, you would just wipe out everything on Earth.
Right. But you know what? Sometimes I'm like, okay, like the sun is really beaming down. There's a heat wave. There's no wind. Is there no wind because the heat is preventing the weather system from forming? Is that what it is? I don't know. It's a strange moment. And but finally, I guess the unfriendly farewell, that is Ben's team-up tradition. I think this one's friendlier than others.
Yeah, no animosity. I mean, they walk up sort of amnesiac of the last week or however many events. Modred walks off to manipulate Jessica Drew or just tell her her secret origin or something like that. But then we don't see them together again. But I think maybe he walks off with Spider-Woman and just says, you know, I think you should wear a wig. I think you would look good with long black hair.
I mean, that's one of the changes. And Ben's not going to remember it, but he does get a kiss from Spider-Woman. So that particular, you know, long team up ends very friendly. Modred gives him what he wants, which is the mind wipe. So this is like one of the friendliest farewells. It's just not one that he can remember.
Right.
Finally, we have to ask, if this were your introduction to Modred the Mystic, it was for me, would you want to read more stories about him?
I say thee nay, as Modred and Thor would say.
I think he does use the phrase, doesn't he?
Yeah, in
the
issue. Yeah.
I say thee 1,000 times nay. I had the page right open on it. I mean, it depends if you like, you know, magical characters, maybe, you know, but I don't know. It's this is not really my cup of tea. All of these like fantasy type characters, especially in this era, there were a lot of fantasy strips in the 70s and early 80s. And none of them really hooked me. They were all trying to do Conan or maybe some kind of, you know, Doctor Strange type, maybe Thor, but just comes off as a little derivative of all those things. On the strength of this issue, I'm not sure I would follow Modred to the ends of the earth. Okay, we'll take a break for a couple promos, and then we'll be back with our special features.
1938. Americans are climbing out of the Great Depression, even as another world war looms on the horizon. Murderers and madmen prey on the helpless and the innocent.
In this time, two restless souls emerge as lights in the darkness.
Insomniac Wesley Dodds, haunted by unspeakable dreams, driven to fight evil as a masked vigilante.
Socialite Diane Belmont, searching for purpose, drawn into a world of mystery and danger.
The wicked beware, for when Wesley and Diane come together, no one can escape the Sandman's dark dream.
Justice Society presents The Sandman Slept Here, covering Vertigo's Sandman Mystery Theater, one story at a time. Hosted by Ryan Daly,
Paul Ken,
and Max Romero.
Find it on the Justice Society Presents feed.
Part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Dream a little dream of me.
Coming soon from Amalgam Comics. When an assassination attempt on Merlin is thwarted by three promising kids, the Great Wizard turns them into the Legion of Mystic Heroes. Apprentices trained in various magics to protect the realm with other recruits from across the medieval world. In their first adventurous issue, the Legion must protect their master from another powerful magician, Mordru, servant of C'thon. Out as part of Arthurian Week, only from Amalgam Comics.
We're back, and our monthly feature is the bonus team-up, in which each of us proposes, in this case, a perfect Modred the Mystic team-up.
You know how much I like to kind of find, like, weird ones that don't seem like they make sense. So I was kind of thinking of, like, Modred and Blue Beetle, or Modred and Sergeant Rock and Easy Company, just, like, kind of weird ones. But ultimately, with this character, I went with kind of an obvious mystical team-up, so I would have Modred is battling Morgan Le Fay for control of this magical black diamond, and their dueling spells go awry, and Modred ends up in the Oblivion Bar, and he has to team up with members of Shadow Pact to fight Morgan and her new evil partner, Eclipso.
I can criticize that I had a Morgaine element as well. Mordred. I mean, I kept wanting to say Mordred the Mystic, which is part of the, you know, Arthurian legend. So here, I've combined all this. I say Modred the Mystic with the demon, Etrigan, because they're clearly the same character. yeah. Modred is Jason Blood, apprenticed to a demonic Merlin, corrupted by a spell, now living in the present. It's basically the same. So imagine a story where the demon wants to stick it to Morgaine Le Fay, and he goes after her brother Mordred, and he's heard rumors that he's around in 1970s Britain. But no, it's Modred with one less R. So they fight, they team up against Morgaine and et cetera, you know, the normal trajectory for a team up book.
I like that. And actually, you're thinking about the names and the variations got me. I just thought of a new one, one that you might appreciate. It might be up your alley. Modred the Mystic with the Legion of Superheroes. And he gets confused for their villain, Mordru.
Mordru the Mystic.
Yeah.
There's something about the word or the meme. Anyway.
Yeah.
there's something there. I wanna rock! As usual, we're riffing on Ryan's deep interest in music to bring you his musical selection to go with the comic and its guest star. Ryan, what are we listening to while we read this comic? And can it make it better?
Possibly a little bit obvious, but I went with the song Magic Man by Heart from 1975. It's a great one. It's in the song, there is a line about never seeing eyes so blue. And the thing is known as the ever-loving blue-eyed thing. So I just thought that was a nice connection.
It's a great song, obviously. Yeah. It's Heart. The first height of their powers.
Mm-hmm.
So there's two heights to their powers, at least. There's nothing so romantic about Mordred with his, like, beautiful white eyes. It's got the right groove for this era, certainly. The modern joke song for me would be Stonehenge by Elvis.
I was thinking about that, or of the Spinal Tap song about Stonehenge.
Yes, also, you know, so that would have been more of a 70s feel, you know, basically.
Right,
but
right.
Hair band of that era. But Plenty of music for you to listen to. And now it's time for feedback on our previous episode, Together, in which we covered Marvel 2-in-1 number 32, starring The Thing, The Invisible Girl, and still Spider-Woman. Let me start here with Bucky749. During one of Reed's experiments, he opens a portal to the Nintendoverse, and Sue Storm teams up with Kirby to fight Doom's new Frightful Four. So there's a cute Kirby reference in there, Easter egg in there.
Oh, yeah. I was trying to think. I was like, what about the Nintendo Kirby? But obviously, Jack Kirby. Oh, nice. Okay, I get it. That's nice.
That pink ball, but also Jack Kirby.
Yeah. Rob Kelly, one of the founders of our Fire and Water Network, our water elemental, he says, I think the only real problem with the cover is the city background. Either someone should have erased all of the details and just left the cityscape silhouette. Was Vince Coletta out that day? Or not use that grayish green. Gray tends to deaden any color, any other colors placed near it. And then Rob says, and yeah, that shot of Spider-Woman in the splash was a choice.
Nate the Great riffed on that, said they must have also thought the best part of Spider-Woman was behind her.
Rob McCarthy, Rob's headcanon, Sue's into fashion and Reed makes fabrics. Paul Cornell made her a rare book dealer.
Gothos Mansion says, for the most part, I enjoy Marv Wolfman's writing. Really, I do. However, considering Marv absolutely ruined two previously great series with new terrible characters, he's talking about Danny Chase in Titans and Harold H. Harold in Tomb of Dracula, maybe we should just be grateful that Chauncey and Trevor only appeared in a few issues. It doesn't feel like just a few.
Well, since we started it like a year and a half ago, it doesn't feel. Chris Pine said, me. Oh, wow, a new Marvel 2-in-1 episode. I've been binging these. I can't wait to check it out. Ryan, Sue is the least visible member of the Fantastic Four. Me. I'm out. Sorry, Chris. I don't remember making a comment that almost dad jokey, but yeah, sorry.
Sometimes it's accidental. We're right. Just, you know, too clever for our own. Brett Young says, I listened to this episode as I shoveled my car out of ice and snow. It has been a while. Thanks for the distraction. Sue Richards' history and Spider-Woman's butt. I'm going to disagree with you guys, though. I like the Perez cover. I know it's busy, but I think it's impactful and a lot of fun. I always like how he drew a curvy Sue Richards.
And Tim Price from The Outcasters, who has started a new podcast covering the beloved Under Siege arc of the Avengers. You can check that out. Tim said, why is no one else proposing Invisible Woman team-ups? Well, I'm going obvious with the Legion of Superheroes Invisible Kids. Yes, both of them. Dimension travel foobars bring Sue to Jacques' time, and the only way to get her home is to travel to the time of Lyle. Plenty of action, thanks to the TVA's Justice Peace and old-school time trapper getting in the way. Plus, Lyle getting a little crush on Sue for her to playfully muss his hair and say, oh, if you were older, you'd remind me of somebody I know. Harmless, I promise, since she does like the brainy guys.
Well, that's the end of the mailbag. Thanks for teaming up with me, Ryan. You want to tell people what else you're working on at the moment?
You can always find me at Batman Nightcast every month with Chris Franklin. At the time you're hearing this one, I think I have wrapped up Cheers Cast Season 9, but I should be starting Season 10 sometime this summer. Every couple of months, you can hear me, Max Romero, and Paul Keen talk about the Sandman Mystery Theater comic on Sandman Slept Here, which is part of the Justice Society Presents feed. And also, I believe at the time that this episode is coming out, I will drop a new episode of Give Me Those Star Wars, sort of tying into the release of the movie The Mandalorian and Grogu. Me and Captain Entropy talk about a Boba Fett comic from the 90s.
Okay. The reminder that we do have a Patreon. So if you like this content, one more like it, think about leaving a monthly or one-time donation, the amount of which will allow you to unlock rewards. Check it out at patreon.com/FWPodcast. This month, we're proud to team up with our sponsor, Alan W. Wright, the Bold Outlaw. And we enjoy reading your thoughts. The best place for that is fireandwaterpodcast.com. We'll read your comments on this issue when Ryan is back with us. But next month, I'll be here with Bass as we continue our coverage of DC Comics Presents with issue 13 of that series. So on that, see you next time for another amazing superhero team-up, because after all, justice
is a mystical effort. Why did
We have to die.